This is Without Compromise, a show that explores what happens when you won't settle for anything less than your crazy ideas. We'll talk to athletes, founders, adventurers, and entrepreneurs of all kinds about living without compromise. I'm your host, Mason Gravely. Welcome to the show.
We're programmed for survival, so our instinct is to give up on these situations, to move away from them.
I thought if I didn't sign up for that race, that I was just going to disappear.
It doesn't have to be these big, huge things that everyone thinks you need to do to make a difference.
Outdoor experiences are so powerful. You know, here at Athletic Brewing, we highly value outdoor experiences, adventure, getting out on a hike, walking your dog, whatever it is, just being in nature is so important to us humans. It's one of our most important values here at Athletic Brewing, and that's why we have supported hundreds of organizations through our Two for the Trails program, and it's why so many of our brews feature nature and trails and being outdoors. And one of the organizations that we've been supporting since almost day one is the Appalachian Mountain Club. They are a legendary organization, almost 150 years old, one of the earliest organizations in the country that was solely focused on fostering a love and a connection and an appreciation for the outdoors. And you may also know it is Women's History Month, and specifically International Women's Day. And we have a brew that comes out every year celebrating women called Trailblazer. It is a toast to progress for Women's History Month. And what's so cool about today's story is that the stars have just aligned. Nicole Zussman here is the president and CEO of the Appalachian Mountain Club and the first female CEO and leader since being founded a century and a half ago. She's a trailblazer, and what we're going to learn is that a trip to climb a mountain led to all of this. So here's a toast to everyone like Nicole, a true trailblazer, on International Women's Day in Women's History Month with one of our longest-standing Two for the Trail partners. Cheers to all of that. All right, let's catch up to Nicole on the trail. Let's go. You heard a little bit of Nicole Zussman's story in the intro. Gonna welcome Nicole now. Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, doing fantastic. This is a huge honor. Like I was saying, through Athletic Brewing, we've been supporting the Appalachian Mountain Club for quite a few years. So this is a huge honor. Where are you coming from today?
So I'm from Stamford, Connecticut, which is where my home base is, about 30 miles outside of New York City. But I spend more than 50% of my time up and down from Virginia to Maine, which is where our region focuses on.
And I think a lot of people would be surprised by how great the outdoor opportunities are just outside of the city. I know that's something y'all talk about a lot, but I still find it surprising when I'm visiting.
It's so interesting because I think it's a total misnomer that, oh, you live in New York and how do you have access to the outdoors? And, you know, we, our New York, New Jersey chapter is actually the oldest chapter in the AMC and one of our largest. We have about 10,000 members. And we, Harriman State Park, which is right outside New York City, and it's beautiful. It's where I recreate. We have a camp called Corman Harriman Outdoor Center that is built on a lake. It's got cabins. You can hike. You can snowshoe. You can boat. And then we are building another camp in Harriman called Baker Outdoor Center. And when it's finished, it will be our largest facility in our entire region.
Oh, wow.
So it's a real focus of mine to continue to build out the AMC in New York, in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, DC, Baltimore, because that's where there's the greatest population. There are millions and millions of people who are out there already recreating and who we want to get out there to recreate with us.
And I'm not just saying this because you're on here. I've been saying this for the last year, is my favorite hike of 2023. And I got to hike Yosemite National Park in the backcountry, Rocky Mountains, all over the country. Favorite hike of the year was in New Jersey. And I think it was just because stumbled across this little conservation area that had some trails, had it all to myself for hours. And it was a beautiful day. And I didn't even mean to do this. It was just I had extra time between some work stuff. And I said, I had no idea. There was a waterfall out there. There was a big rock ledge. It was beautiful. Nothing on the map about it. No one told me. And I just think, How many of these hidden gems are there? And it really opened my eyes to just how beautiful and not just it's great that it's land, but it's high quality outdoor experiences adjacent to some pretty big metro areas. Do you come across that kind of experience a lot?
Absolutely. I mean, all the time. It's so interesting because within our AMC community, certainly up in the White Mountains, there's a group of people that are known as tracers. And if you're a tracer, it means that you've done every single trail in the White Mountain New Hampshire Guide, which is over 1,600 miles. And so people, and I was actually hiking with a woman who finished her. She was the 43rd woman to ever do it. She's 70 years old. And she said, when you're doing your tracing, you have to actually go on every little spur that's on the trail. Like if you wanted to count, and there's just so many hidden gems out there. And that's, again, there's a whole big debate around doing things for hitting your goals and competition versus doing them for enjoyment. But it is really a way through all of our guides and maps to explore trails that you probably didn't even know existed. And that's actually one of the ways there's, a 4,000 footer club, which is people that have done all 48 4,000 footers. And it originally started back in the 50s to give exposure to the little known 4,000 footers. I mean, everybody knows Mount Washington, but, you know, the other day I hiked Mount Hale, and like I would never have hiked Mount Hale except that I'm in pursuit of my 48. So I had to, you know, explore it, and it was beautiful. So I think that happens all the time. And that's the beauty of the outdoors and the beauty of the information and education that the AMC can provide to the general public.
Yeah. And you know, that's an interesting topic that I won't spend too much time on, but just that, is it a goal or is it something you actually want to do? And as humans, we just kind of need that infrastructure sometimes to force us out the door. And you know, that's fine if that's what gets you to go. And then you have all these memories that last because, you know, you actually put yourself out there to go get that basically peak bag. And but you wouldn't have seen that moose. You wouldn't have seen that fish jump in the lake. You wouldn't have had those experiences had you not had that goal in mind. So as long as, you know, you understand that, I think it's great. Can I ask this, too? Because I'm from my family's from the Carolinas and they all say Appalachian. Do you let people just say what they want to? Is there a right way? Appalachian versus Appalachian?
Yeah, it's so interesting. I mean, there's also often a lot of confusion between us and the Appalachian Trail Conservancy, yep, which is a great partner to us who maintains the AT. And people always say to me, oh, where are your chapters in North Carolina or Georgia, in real Appalachia? And at some point, historically, we did have a chapter down in North Carolina. I let everybody say what they want to say. I think people from the Appalachia region pronounce it that way, and people not from it say Appalachia Mountain Club. So we're inclusive to all.
It's all the same trail. Yeah. You're all getting out there. Well, I want to hear a little bit about your story. How did you get to this position? Because, you know, if you look at where you came from, it didn't, you know, this didn't seem like the most obvious next step. I don't know if it feels that way to you, but I just think it's so interesting. And I don't know if I've heard that story in depth. And I just would love to spend a little time with some of your early outdoor experiences and what kind of planted the seed for where you've been for the last year.
Sure. So I do have an interesting story. I think in general, I have been a lifelong outdoor enthusiast. I love and the outdoors to me has always served as my de-stressor, my valve reliever. Like I spent almost 30 years working in corporate America, but always my vacations were centered around outdoor activities on weekends at night. I mean, that was the way that I found total joy. And I always remember, you know, and still to this day, whenever I hike and I'm on top of a mountain and I look out and I always think, wow, I'm so lucky to see this. And there's so many millions of people that never get that opportunity. And I've always just been wowed by, I wish everybody had that feeling of joy. And so I had, as I mentioned, I spent most of my career in human resources, in corporate, and had kind of come to the decision that I believe that everybody can have multiple careers And I made the decision that I wanted to go work in nonprofit for an organization whose mission I deeply feel passionate about. And in January of 2022, I hiked Mount Kilimanjaro, which was hugely on a bucket list of mine. It was an amazing, amazing experience because you're hiking for 8 days just in your head within it. Really, you know, for me was a life changer because I came off the mountain and I quit my corporate job.
Was that something you were like planning on doing, or did that happen through to the hike?
Through the hike. I mean, I knew I was like, I want a career change. I want to do something different. But typical me, I would have talked about it for the next 10 years and not done anything about it. And it really was through the hike. Like I had so much time in my own head to just think through life. And again, the entire experience was so spectacular. So I came down, I quit my job. It was the first time I hadn't worked since I was 15 years old. I mean, it was terrifying. And I really, you know, focused on mission-based organizations that I cared passionately about. And somebody was connected into AMC. And when they contacted me, I was like, I've been a member for 10 years. I've stayed in all the huts. I just love the organization. And it was such an amazing experience to go through the interview process and actually end up where I was. So I say every day I have the best job in America. I truly believe that. I have my dream job. I do think, you know, and I hope that anybody out there listening, if you're thinking about doing something, just go for it. Like life is short and I think people should live their life to its fullest. And now I totally have the opportunity to do that.
And you took the leap of faith without the next step being, I mean, you didn't even know what that next step was going to be.
No.
This wasn't on your radar at the time. And that was about a year before you started the job. What would you say, you know, your 30 years in corporate America and your background of HR, what would you say kind of uniquely prepared you for this that maybe someone always in the outdoor industry might have just not had in their mind or been prepared with?
So I think there's a couple things. I mean, the AMC runs from Virginia to Maine. We have 11 chapters and we are really volunteer run and led. And so, you know, every day, if you go on our website, there's dozens and dozens of activities in every type of outdoor, sport. And it's all led by our volunteers. So we really are a people-centric organization and we're complicated because it's not staff run and it's this very complex organization. So my background in working with groups of people in all walks of life and like bringing them together under one umbrella to work towards, I always say, row in the same direction and work towards delivering mission impact, I think was unique. I would say secondly, you know, the outdoor world, particularly post-COVID, massively changed. And we really are in process of going through a digital transformation. And I say that in the sense of we want to be able to people to sign up for activities in a frictionless way, gain access to information, gain access to maps, our trail maps, all in a much more digital manner. And having worked in tech companies for a long time, I've got a lot of background in digital transformation and also from a marketing perspective and how do you reach a broader community. So I think a lot of it is being at the right place at the right time for what the organization needs. And at the end of the day, any president or CEO, their main role is to lead with vision and to get everybody in your community behind that vision. And that's something that I think it doesn't matter what industry you come from, you need to have that skill set. And certainly when it's something, when your vision is your true passion, it's easy to lead, you know, in that direction.
It's a leap of faith for you, but I also feel like it's a leap of faith for AMC. You're the first woman to serve as a CEO. You're outside of, you know, you're not, you haven't been a part of the organization as far as employed for years. And also it's a very old organization. Almost you're coming up on 150 years. So
yeah,
I'd say both of you kind of are taking a leap of faith in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, we've this year developed organizational values. And one of our values is bold. And I give the board a ton of credit for being bold. I really believe in that value. So it was a bold move, but it certainly paid off, I think, on both sides. And the organization is energized. We're moving forward. We've got aspirational big goals for the future. So we're excited.
Tell us a little bit about those major programs that you do. I'm more familiar, not personally, but I know about the HUT system. But what are some of those other things that y'all's mission is based around of?
Great. So first and foremost, our, you know, vision and mission is to get people outdoors. And while that doesn't sound so unique, it truly is, because a lot of conservation organizations just focus on protecting and conserving land. And a lot of recreation organizations just focus on people getting out there and recreating. And we're really that epicenter of people in the outdoors. And the way we do it is we have lodging facilities throughout our region. We have three magnificent lodges in Maine that are open year round. And so I'll be heading up there shortly. You can ski from lodge to lodge, and we actually move your luggage between them on snowmobiles. So you're skiing about, you know, 7 to 9 miles a day, and then you stay at the lodge, and then the next, you know, it's kind of like hiking hut to hut, but you're skiing it. And then, you know, also up in Maine, we do a lot of experiential learning. So this past year we had theme weeks. So we had a gravel biking week. We've got miles and miles of gravel biking trails. As I mentioned, we do a lot of winter sports. We have over, you know, 93 miles of groomed cross country trails. We have an International Dark Sky Festival. We are the only international dark sky east of the Mississippi. And I can tell you, if you go up there and you're out there in the middle of the night, it's like nothing you've ever seen before. We ran a birding festival. So we do a lot of these kind of affinity theme weeks that if you are interested in astronomy, you know, during this International Dark Sky Week, you'll hear from astronomers giving, you know, educational sessions at night. We also have, you know, as you mentioned, what we're most known for is our high huts in the White Mountain National Forest. But we also have our signature lodges that are roadside in the White Mountains, which is Joe Dodge Lodge and Highland Center. And we really believe on meeting people wherever they are in their outdoor journey. So you don't have to be a hardcore hut to hut, or I'm going to hike the 4,000 footers. There are so many day programs associated with those lodges. We also provide at the Highland Center, for example, we have a gear library that looks as large as any L.L. Bean store. And in fact, they're one of our sponsors of the gear library. So if you stay at Highland, you can borrow a backpack, you can borrow hiking boots, you can borrow whatever you need, which really reduces barriers to the outdoors. Because a lot of people are like, great, I want to try it for the first time or for a weekend, but I don't want to go spend $1,000 on gear. Do I even know if I'm going to like it? And we really, you know, break down that barrier. Mm-hmm. And that's a big part of our mission, is reducing barriers to the outdoors. And we also reduce those barriers by, as I mentioned, we have, you know, 11 chapters, and all of our activities are volunteer led and they are free. And there are literally, in any type of, whether it's hiking, whether it's backcountry skiing, whether it's learning how to backpack, we have all levels, paddling. I mean, last year, our Connecticut chapter, for example, led 45 whitewater rafting events that were completely free of charge, that you could literally, you know, whitewater down on the Connecticut River and learn how to do it. Like,
and anybody who can show up to this? Members or anybody?
Yes. Well, obviously, we hope our members. We encourage people to join. Our chapters use, you can always go on our website to see all of the activities. And our chapters also often use Meetup. They have much broader groups to, you know, advertise. So we will never turn anybody away. And if you're not a member and you show up to an activity, we will encourage you to join. And we encourage people to join because your membership dollars really goes towards our protection of the outdoors. We, in terms of continuing on with our activities, we spend a lot of time conserving and protecting land. We own over 100,000 acres in the Maine wilderness. And we view that as a really holistic approach to land management. We don't just close off the land, but obviously that size sequesters a lot of carbon. So it really helps in fighting climate change, but we open it up as a, on all the trails. We also employ the local community to do all of our road repair work. We have we're doing a lot of work on fish passages and opening up what had been culverts, blocking the endangered North Atlantic salmon. We're reopening all these fish passages and bringing the salmon back up north. And then we do a lot of policy work. We have a policy team that advocates on a local level as well as on a federal level for legislation around protecting the environment. We have a large research team. Our, because of the age of our organization, as you mentioned, we're almost 150 years old. You know, we have been measuring snowpack in the Whites for decades and decades. And snowpack measurement really informs what's happening with climate change and you know, how the whole watershed supply to the Northeast. So we do so much mission-based work around, you know, protecting the outdoors so that we do have an outdoors that people can recreate on for the for decades and decades to come.
Hopefully millennia to come.
Yes.
How do you keep a handle on all this? Good Lord. And here's the other thing I think that's so fascinating about y'all is, you know, a lot of organizations have a mission of getting more people outside and offer, you know, opportunities hiking. But the amount that you offer and that's free is, I didn't know that. That is so exciting. But y'all have something very unique is that you also own a lot of land. 100,000 acres is not a small parcel. That's on par with some of the quite large national parks, state parks, federally protected, state protected areas. How is that managed? Who do you lean on for that? Because there's a lot that goes into land management, and it's a lot of work.
Yeah. So you're absolutely right. It's a huge. It's the way I always describe it to put it into perspective. Our main wilderness is double the size of Acadia National Park. That's how vast it is. And one of my direct reports, Steve Tatko, is our VP of Land and Trails and Research. And he grew up at the AMC. He actually grew up in Maine on this land and is a forester by trade. And so he oversees the land management in conjunction with his team. We employ foresters. And then we use a lot of local partners, again, as I mentioned, to maintain the trails, to do the timber harvesting. We do, you know, harvest timber up there because we believe in responsible old growth forests. So it's a real network of local community partners and our own staff that support that land.
Does that include the 30,000 acres that was added last year?
No, the 100 was prior to just this, not, you know, we, as you mentioned, we acquired in conjunction with the Conservation Fund.
Yes.
The Barnard Forest, which was an additional 30,000. We are in process of still fundraising for that. And so the deal will officially close. I mean, we own it in conjunction with the Conservation Fund, but once we've raised all the money, then that will officially become 130,000 acres under full AMC ownership.
Are these kind of 30,000 acre opportunities like still available in the Northeast? Do you see this as being one of the, you know, lesser and lesser frequency? I just wasn't aware that that kind of large scale conservation was still possible.
It really only is in Maine, I would say, for the most part. I mean, that is, and because, and this has been 20 years in the making, you know, our Maine Woods Initiative started over 20 years ago. There's still plenty of people with the organization that were at the forefront of that. There is, you know, but it is one of the last places, certainly in America, certainly on the, you know, East Coast, first and foremost, where there is that type of large scale opportunities available. But because of the way that we have managed the land for the past 20 years, the local community turns to us whenever, you know, the way this, the Barnard Forest acquisition happened is because the prior owners knew us And rather it would have gone up on the auction block. It could have been developed. I mean, it could have gone in a much worse direction, but they reached out to us first to say, you know, we're interested in selling and we would love you to be, you know, the owners. So, you know, we've just built up this reputation in the community that we, you know, take care of the community, that we bring, you know, people now come to the Maine woods that never would have from across America. I mean, every year our guests, you know, come from all over the states because it's so special and it's so beautiful up there.
So what are some of the other challenges that you think are on the horizon for AMC and for your mission that maybe weren't present 20, 30 years ago and definitely not present when AMC was founded?
Well, it's so interesting because one of, I think, the biggest benefits yet challenges, so many more people are getting outdoors, as we know. And COVID, certainly the pandemic really, accelerated that immensely. But what that means is massive more usage of trails. And so while we're thrilled that millions of people are getting out there, it really takes a lot of wear and tear on the trails. And that's another area that we are really top in the states on trail building and trail maintenance. That's another huge piece of, you know, part of our work. And it's really, really expanded over the past even 5 years. We, you know, have a near in New Hampshire near Joe Dodge Lodge. We have something called Camp Dodge, which is our trail skills college. And it's where we house our trail crew. We house 120 trail crew all summer long that were spent, you know, again, rebuilding some trails. I mean, one of the most famous, you know, trails in the Whites is the old bridle path going up to the Franconia Ridge. And it has just been completely eroded between climate change and thousands of people, you know, hiking on it every day. And we were able to receive a federal appropriation through our New Hampshire delegation to repair it. So it's a multi-year project. That's a real challenge that, you know, really has come about in the past 5 to 10 years. You didn't see the type of trail erosion because of climate change, as well as because of the volume of people, that we, again, have to make sure that we're maintaining our trails. And we've also started another niche area that we do is we build all persons trails, because we believe that, you know, trails, the outdoors is accessible to all. So we just built a beautiful all persons trail at our Cardigan Lodge, which is in Alexandria, New Hampshire. And it's a mile with flat grade that can handle any wheelchair. And it just enables anybody of any ability to be able to spend, you know, time in the outdoors. So I think that's a real also shift in making sure that the outdoors is accessible to all. We have something called an Outdoor Journey Fund that other nonprofit organizations can access if they need subsidies for financially for getting their groups up, or they need guides to get their groups up. We take up wounded warriors. This past year, we had a organization that is visually impaired that hiked Mount Pierce with our guides. So we do a lot of work like that. And are really looking to build out, you know, that area of our business. So that's definitely an area of growth. And then I guess going back to your question on challenges, I mean, our biggest challenge is it's hard to even say fighting climate change. Now it's more mitigating the impact of climate change. I don't know, you know, it is here. It is real. You know, we had the wettest summer on record, across our region, and doesn't look like that's going to change. There is, as we're all very aware, winter whiplash is here. You know, in any given 48 hours, it can be 20 degrees and the next day it's 55 degrees. And that is really bad for the environment. It's really bad for the land. It's really bad for, you know, biodiversity. So our research team and policy team is really focused on that, again, to ensure that we have a healthy outdoors.
Right. And you have you're in a great position to gather that data.
And we use data. I mean, that is what, you know, we are scientists. It is not, and, you know, when people question it, it's data driven with decades and decades of data.
You know, those are some of the challenges. When we were talking about this just before that was the popularity, these high huts, the hiking stuff in and out. Well, with the growth and kind of the awareness of these experiences and the popularity, How do y'all balance your conservation goals with, hey, this is a huge revenue driver for us. Should we build more huts? Is there the capacity? Like, you know, you got to, you know, not prioritize, but you got to balance those needs as well.
Yeah, I mean, so we, so the huts are spectacular, and I would tell anybody it truly is an epic experience. And, you know, when you talk about the impact on conservation, we are still transporting our food up to the huts as we did 100 years ago. So if you work at our huts and you're, we call the people that work there crew, C-R-O-O, it's an AMC thing. They put pack boards on their back twice a week. These old school pack boards
look very uncomfortable.
Yeah, they carry 70 pounds of food up. And then when they go back down, they're carrying all the trash down out. So we really, again, are trying to mitigate, like, you know, the human impact as best we can. We have a whole, we really pioneered, we use a Clive composting system that, you know, for our toilets, which is, you know, you dump these worms into these big compost things and they make the compost and we put it back into the woods. So it's like a full holistic cycle of human waste going back into, you know, back on the land. And, you know, we are not, we have a large geographic footprint. And as I mentioned earlier, where our growth is and is in the larger population areas where we're building a camp in Harriman State Park. I mean, we do not have, you know, plans to build more huts. We're a permittee with the White Mountain National Forest. They own the land where the huts are, and we're a permittee of theirs. And we work very closely, and we're really great partners with White Mountain National Forest because we work together to make sure that we're not having a harmful or outsized impact on the land. And that's why, you know, it's very strictly jointly regulated by both of us.
When you first started, you were talking about doing this road trip to all the huts and to all the areas and to all the chapters. Did you end up doing that to kind of get a sense? And tell us maybe what was like one of the biggest understandings from that road trip? But tell us about that first.
So I have been to every facility, visited every chapter. I mean, I think it's really important to totally immerse yourself and, you know, really understand what we do. And so one, it is how complex we are and how it's just unbelievable to me. I think, you know, the greatest part of my first year and of our organization is the people that I meet. They're always super interesting. They care deeply about the right things. They care, you know, deeply about access to the outdoors and conservation. And, you know, the people that choose to volunteer or work for the AMC really deeply, deeply care, which is so different than many organizations. So I think that was my, you know, one of my greatest aha moments was the community that we have is truly spectacular. I'm inspired every day. I mean, again, because we've been around for so long, you know, I've met people that became members in the 40s. I hiked with a 92-year-old who was one of the fathers of the Bay Circuit Trail, which we helped to maintain in Massachusetts. And, you know, he gave me a run for his money. I mean, I meet people all the time that are doing, you know, older people that are still super active, which is just so impressive. And then I meet young families who their kids are out there for the first time, you know, learning how to backpack. And that's really amazing. So, it really gave me a good appreciation of all the work we do and just listening to both of our members, our staff, and what they want and what they want from the AMC. Because my goal is to have mission impact and provide what our members and our broader population, you know, needs from us.
Tell us about some of your initiatives, which are recreation, conservation, and education. Do you find that I find that people that mature in the outdoors and fall in love, those kinds of things just start happening naturally, but they work with each other and it almost becomes this cycle that's like the more you recreate, well, the more you understand and the more you want it to protect. And so you educate yourself on these topics and then you want to get out more and it's a vicious cycle, Nicole. It's a vicious cycle.
Well, we don't call it a vicious cycle. We call it a theory of change. It's exactly the way you've described it. I mean, we truly believe the more you get outside and the more people we get outside, then they will care about it and they will become conservation stewards. So it is a way to really, you know, harness the energy of people that just love the outdoors by them realizing that you have to take care of it. And you have to yourself. I mean, for example, you can go on our website and sign up for something called the Conservation Action Network. And that's, you know, we will send you, and I'm sure you might be from other organizations, you know, Pat, emails to send to your state representative when it's a policy, whether it's, you know, land and water conservation funding or whatever, that we want people to get involved. We want to engage people in advocating and stewarding the outdoors. You know, we will meet you wherever you are. If you come in as a conservationist, we can teach you through education how to get outside more. You know, if you're coming in that angle, and if you're coming in from the angle of I'm outside all the time, but I don't know what to do. I feel paralyzed. How do I fight climate change? How can I even have an impact? And, you know, on the education front, for example, we're launching a contest in February. We have an app. It's called Snow Source, and you can measure snowpack yourself and then upload it like wherever you are. Wow. And again, we try and create community scientists. We also have an iNaturalist app where if you're out on the AT, you know, take a picture of flora, fauna, and upload it. And we use when it's blooming and when it's dying as a harbinger, again, of climate change. So we're trying to get people outside so that they can learn about it through our educational opportunities and then become stewards of it.
And again, you're almost providing them that infrastructure to get them out the door. You know, we need that. And if it is like, hey, we need data for our snowpack, when it's like, well, I have the app. I do enjoy doing that. Maybe I'll go do that today. You know, that's almost like an opportunity that newness and technology provides that you bring. What would you say are some of those other innovations you're working on? I'm sure an organization, especially with so many volunteers and so much legacy, it can be hard to introduce new ideas a lot of the times, because I always find volunteer-based organizations, the compensation is not money. It's emotional connection. It's relationships and its legacy, which can be very hard to navigate. So how do you introduce innovation into an organization like AMC?
Yeah, I mean, and I think, you know, I don't know if it's, I would call it innovation, but what we really are focused on is growing our community, both in numbers, but as well in diversity. And diversity can mean what you look like. It can mean your socioeconomic status. It can mean where you are in your outdoor skill level. But we are really looking to evolve, I think, from this historically older organization of hardcore, you know, outdoor, you know, peak baggers, to really, we want to be reflective of the community around us. Where, you know, I'm very focused on families, because in my listening tour, anybody I asked, I'm saying 90% of the people would say, oh, when I was a kid, I had this family adventure. I did something with my family, and that was my first love. And it really shows me there's a huge through line to passion for the outdoors and doing something super fun when you were a kid with your family. And so I think if we can continue to really cultivate families and provide experiences for them, that's really going to help, one, again, create the next generation of stewards and the next generation of enthusiasts. But, you know, that takes time. We need to, you know, focus on partnering with other affinity groups, whether that's Latino Outdoors or Outdoor Afro, other groups that are bringing different populations out to the outdoors. How can we partner with them? I know with Athletic Brewing, we had our annual summit this weekend, and we had over 400 volunteers. We had workshops all weekend, and Jay Levy gave a workshop on the work that he's doing, the Indigenous Site Survey on the NAT, in which I know, thank you, that Athletic Brewery is hoping to sponsor. And, you know, it was fascinating to listen to him. I learned so much. And, you know, I would love, as we chatted, I chatted with him afterwards, how can we build out that partnership and do more work and help him in his work? So I think it's really, you know, looking at that holistic view of what the outdoors was historically and acknowledging it and what it can be going forward.
Tell us a story that gives you the most hope for the future of outdoor recreation in general. Maybe it's directly through a story with AMC or just anything that kind of is almost anecdotal that you could point to and say, this kind of story, this kind of email or message or experience really gives me hope for the future.
Yeah.
It might be tough to pull out a, you know, thin air.
No. It's funny. I will tell you the very first time that I went up to the huts, and I went with friends, and I always did a ton of hiking locally in the New York area. And one of my friends said, "Oh, have you ever heard about these huts in the high mountains?" So we planned a trip. And when you go up to the huts, you know, meals are included, and the crew makes homemade bread every night and soup. I mean, it's a multi-course meal.
Gosh.
And they call you in, you eat family style. And that's what a lot of people love about it, because you're meeting a community. You're sitting at a table sharing stories. And I was sitting out on the porch chatting with a young guy and his 8-year-old son, and they called for dinner. And I said, "Oh, you know, come in." And he said, "No, I'm actually a through hiker. And I took my son out of school in March." His son was 8 years old. It was now July. We were up on the Whites. And I was wowed. And I ended up chatting with this kid. And he just was telling me story after story about his adventure with his dad and how he couldn't believe he was up in these huts. And it was so amazing. And I was just like, you know what? The world is going to be okay, because, you know, again, and it goes back to the families and hearing, you know, from young kids who just have these amazing experiences. Another program that we run is called the Mountain Classroom. And we run that in New Hampshire, where we bring school groups out, you know, to hike and provide education. And just listening to those kids, I mean, it truly gives me such joy. Like, at the end of the day, that's the feeling of, wow, like the future is bright. And I believe that.
Wow, what a great story. I love that. I mean, I'm looking at a picture of one of your huts right now. I'm not sure which one it is, but thinking to have a hot meal in that after a long day of hiking with a bunch of people at sunset in the mountains, like, I can't think of a better thing in the whole world to do.
There is nothing better. It is spectacular.
Because the shared meal and just a good meal is such a unique element of that. Because you can do that in a lot of places, but not there. Really special what you'll have. Any major announcements or any major shifts that are the upcoming 150th anniversary of AMC? I'm sure a lot of that's, you know, under wraps right now, but anything you kind of foresee?
Yeah. And again, I wouldn't call it anything major, but we're really going to focus the next few years. You know, building equitable access is going to be a real focus of ours. And what we mean by that is both physical, like, where should we be building trails, you know, building them more near environmental justice communities. Like, we do believe that the outdoors is for all, and there needs to be open space for all. And really, you know, again, focusing on building our all persons trail. So I think building access in a physical way, as well as removing barriers in a economic way. So building out our gear libraries, so there's more of them across our region, building up our outdoor journey fund so that more and more organizations can access it. You know, that's where, you know, we really want to focus our efforts so that more and more people can get outdoors and have those joyous outdoor experiences.
I had someone recently reach out and say, you know, why does it matter who enjoys the outdoors? Why does it need to be a diverse group out there? Why can't you just let people do what they're into, what they want to do? What's your answer to that? Because I thought it was interesting that, you know, there's folks that don't get why this is such a big push in the outdoor industry.
I think it's twofold. One, because historically there were so many barriers to the outdoors. So I think oftentimes when people say that, they actually don't recognize how many barriers have historically existed. And we're actually working with an organization, and their name is DEI Outdoors. And we're working with them. They're an amazing organization to really help us ensure that access. And it's important because it's a moral imperative that everybody does have access to the outdoors. I mean, for example, and when you talk about environmental justice communities, if you look in, you know, urban areas, they in low-income neighborhoods have the least access to the outdoors. It's just all concrete. There's no green. They're hotter as a result. Like when you don't have trees and forests, they are physically hotter. And everybody should have that same access and ability to get outdoors. So, and if you don't want to be outdoors, like I always say, our place is not to convince people to go outdoors. Like we're not going to go talk to the person sitting on the couch and try and convince them how great it is. But it's for the people that want to get out there and they might not know how, you know, have the skills, have never done it, have the equipment, you know, have the know-how. That's where we really want to be the enabler. And it's important to, you know, reflect the community around you. Every time I would say in the past 5 years, when I am out on the trail, whether it's an AMC trail or any trail, it is a diverse group of people out there. It's already out there. So let's make sure that we're providing that. So that would be my answer.
I know y'all are very regionally specific. Is there any other region of the country or the world that you think's doing a really good job of doing your mission as well? That they're like, hey, they're doing a great job where they work.
That's a good question. You know, out west, a peer organization is the Mountaineers. I think you know they're doing similar work really well. But I would say, you know, what impresses me the most, and we work with a lot of these smaller groups, are all the land trusts that are out there, you know, and people, I would love anybody listening to this podcast to please join as a member, but also, you know, go out and volunteer in your local park and your local land trust. I mean, that's also how we are going to protect the world. It's not always through large scale national or regional organizations. I think it's super important to get involved at a local level as well. And so, you know, we love being great partners in every state, in every local municipality. And a lot of our volunteer trail maintainers, you know, started because they were maintaining the trail in their local land trust and then said, oh, you know, I became an AMC member and now I'm maintaining, you know, some of AMC's trails. So I love like the work, you know, done at a local level.
You know, at Athletic Brewing, our kind of internal motto for a long time was brew without compromise, which basically means, you know, just do it as excellently as possible. But we realize you kind of have to live without compromise to do anything with excellence and without compromise. What does living without compromise mean to you?
Ooh, that is a great question. I think living without compromise is really being laser focused on delivering, for me in my role, delivering our mission. And that is without compromise. And we have to ask ourselves every day, are the activities that we're doing, is the work that we're doing going to deliver greatest mission impact, which is the protection and enjoyment of the outdoors? And we have to do that without compromise.
You can learn more about Nicole in the Appalachian Mountain Club at outdoors.org. They like have the outdoors website. Crazy. That's how important they are. As well as our Women's History Month brew trailblazer, go to athleticbrewing.com and know that your support is helping fund trail projects all over the country through our Two for the Trails program.